Hello, thanks, Jan. I'm Angie. I'm a woman in recovery. Because I've known about this for a couple of days, I've been wondering what to say, and then I just remembered that whatever I plan, it never pans out. So, remember when I was growing up, my dad's an alcoholic. So I remember him demolishing the Christmas tree and, hitting the wall with it years ago because he couldn't get booze. Didn't understand it at the time. I was too young. But I remember my mum told us to pack a bag. We were going to stay with my grandma, but we never left. It must have sweet talked her back into staying. And there were a few times like that, and I knew he drank, and that's why he was like he was. But I was always thought, well, why don't he just stop drinking? If he knows that makes him behave like that when he's drunk, just stop. I was a kid, and it seemed very, very simplistic to me. Mean, I think I learned how to roll a cigarette about six because he was really drunk, and he just sort of was flopped in a chair and told me to roll him a cig. And I had no idea. I just went by watching him do it, but I managed it, I think. But there were lots of things like as being warned not to tell anyone that he drank because they started fostering when I was about eight. And all those kids were my brothers and sisters. Immediately when they came to the house, they were my brothers and sisters. Oh, I always felt like that. And I used to have arguments with my grandma because she'd say they're not her grandchildren. Then I'd say, well, I'm not then. And apparently this really upset her, but I never changed my mind. I never said, oh, I'm sorry, you're right. So I grew up vowing I'd never be like my dad, and he drank 24/7. So when I first drank, when I was started when I think I was 13. I never drank during the day. It was always a night time where I went out, so therefore I wasn't like my dad. And I had to leave that house. It was just horrendous. I mean, I had a job in I was like a cashier at a restaurant, and I didn't get home till 12, half 12. I think I was 15 then, and because my curfew was 11, my mum used to get really mad at me, and I'd say, but I can't be home at 11. My job doesn't finish till 12. And she's screaming, and shout, and she once threw a Hoover at me. But that, I still can't figure out the logic of that, having to be home before I even finish. I just think it was some kind of power, some kind of control thing, because she knew she'd always win because she knew I'd never make my curfew. So it was horrendous. Horrendous living with them. So I moved out when I was 16 and then got married when I was 17. But my ex-husband used to beat me up and screw everything that moved. Although I didn't know the last bit until a few years later. But he'd grown up in Australia and he still had a visa. So we emigrated, we went to Australia. And my eldest daughter Laura was born there, and it was wonderful. I loved Australia. I joined a church and made some lovely friends, even though my ex stopped me seeing them eventually because they were nice people and they would encourage me to, I don't know, to say no to stuff that he was demanding that I did. And it was weird because his boundaries never, they change from minute to minute. It'd be wanting me to speak to my friends and getting mad that I spoke to my friends and asked what exactly what I said and did I say anything about him and that he was paranoid. Then eventually, his best friend's brother told me that he'd been screwing this girl called Sharon, and I told him that I had a tape recorder hidden, and I heard him confessing to it in his friend's house. God knows how he talked me out of that one. I think he told me that everybody were lying and I wanted to believe him, so that I did. But then, I eventually found out the truth. I spoke to Sharon and she was fine about it. She wasn't sorry at all. She just told me the truth. And then that's we'd planned to come back to England, and that's when I decided that I was going to divorce him. And then, well, there's a few things that made that decision for me. And I realised I've been drinking a lot, but it's a culture in Australia. Well, it was then. God, it's 35, no, about 38 years ago now, which is a long time. And this one morning I woke up and I wanted a cold drink, so I went to the fridge and got a bottle of beer. And something clicked and I thought, shit, I'm like my dad, getting a cold drink first thing of the morning. And then I think it might have been later on that day, but they all rolled into one. My ex-husband Michael had started beating me up. We were stood together in the dining room and he started punching me. And Laura was sat in a pram in the living room in full view. And she just looked and blinked. She had no reaction. And that was the final decision to divorce him, because I thought, I don't want any kid of mine growing up thinking this is normal, which is what she did. She's seen it that many times. It was just something that happened. So it's, I saw it through a 2-year-old's eyes. Well, she was nearly two. And I just thought, no, I'm not having to grow up thinking this is how men treat women. So then I, sorry a minute. I worked to get the airfares to come back to England because he was too lazy to smoke weed all the time. And then when we got back, I handed Laura over to my mum and dad at the airport. And then I walked around and saw my sister, and the first thing I said to her is, I'm going to divorce him. Which I didn't know beforehand, but I needed the strength of my family behind me to to make that decision, to realize that I didn't have to do it on my own. And I did, and it was most he was really pissed off. But one thing he didn't do was try and be violent with me, which was really weird because that's the reaction I was used to from him. But I think he saw something inside me had changed, because I was dying for him to hit me so that I could beat the crap out of him, because I knew that I could. I knew that I would. What's weird is that we get along fine now. We message each other on Messenger and stuff, and he's apologized for what he did, what he was like. He's not in AA or anything. I mean, as far as I know, he still smokes weed all the time. I know he recently stopped taking morphine, which he's got for chronic pain, but so I don't know what he's doing instead of that, but he seems to have grown a bit, in some ways, and I'm glad for him. I'm indifferent towards him now. I don't hate him anymore. But then, a couple of weeks after getting back to England, my sister worked in a pub just up the road from where we lived. So I used to go up and keep her company whilst getting a bit drunk on the free beer that she gave me, best type. And I met Ian, who was part of the pool team. And then we got together, and a couple of weeks after we met, I landed pregnant with my son Paul. So then me and Ian ended up together for 15 years. And it was what I needed at the time, but it wasn't physically abusive, it was mentally and financially, which I didn't realize until I was a few years out of it. So I'm you know, I've got my son Paul and my daughter Shannon. So they were the good things to come out of that, even though it was horrific. Horrific to my daughters. I can't. He used to make sexual comments about Laura, who was like 13 when we split up. And that was the main reason we split up. But I eventually told my son about that, and he's close to his dad. But he doesn't believe me, or he thinks that Laura and Shannon made it up. So I can't actually do anything about that because Laura mainly doesn't want to. She don't want to go through court and everything. And then with Paul not quite believing me, I can't. My hands are tied. I can't say anything to Ian for a lot of reasons. Yet there'll be a time when I can, the time that I will. So I've just got to be patient and let life happen, I suppose. The only time I used to drink all day was Christmas Day. You know, I remember being with Ian, and I'd be in the kitchen cooking and listening to classical music. I love cooking and baking. I don't do as much of it as I should. But I'd get sherry. I'd have sherry and be a merry cook on Christmas Day. It was lovely. But then, towards the end of us, we'd moved to a new, bigger house, which was gorgeous. I loved that house. And I found myself drinking every evening. I'd put like a litre of, I'd put a 2 litre bottle into to 2 litre bottles, so they were half full, and freeze them. Because then, when it's sort of partly defrosted, you get more alcohol at first rather than the water. And I thought that was a magical idea, you know, to get really drunk really quick. I needed to do that every night. I needed it to sleep. I needed it to not think about what Ian was doing and saying. But sorry about this. Eventually, me and Ian ended up sleeping in different bedrooms, and I wanted back in the main bedroom, and he was downstairs and wanted to take the video recorder up there, and I didn't let him, so I was barricaded in the door, and he started hitting me on the arm with it, and Laura and Shannon were there in the room screaming. And then Laura eventually called the police, and he was taken away. And we split up, thank God. And I had to go to court to fight for a share of the house that we were in because we were engaged but not married. So I ended up being able to claim a third of that and put it down as a deposit on a new house. Then I was free from him. It was wonderful. It was lovely the first Christmas we were there. There was some, I'd had the windows done and I had like French doors put in. and we're all sat in front of the French doors, and it was lovely and cozy, and watching the snow outside, and it was like a magical first Christmas in that house. So because I've moved house, I thought that I was cured. I didn't need to do everything a year suggested. Sorry, I've skipped over going to a year. I was in these chat rooms, a platform called Pal Talk. I don't know if it's still around, but I'd seen that they had these Alcoholics Anonymous rooms. And one night I was bored and I thought, well, let's see what these losers are talking about. And I just listened in and they made so much sense. Talking about I'm the one who pours the alcohol down my throat, so I'm the only one that can stop doing that. And that made me cry. That was the first time I listened to them. And I'm so glad I did. I mean, after a couple of weeks, I eventually went to a face-to-face meeting. And that's what they've been telling me that I needed to do. I'm glad that I did. I had no idea what I was walking into. There were like shiny, happy people there. And it seemed at first they were talking a foreign language because I had no idea what they were talking about let it go and live and let live. And eventually, after going to a few more meetings, I learned more of the AA language. And during that time is when I was splitting up with my ex and buying a house and stuff. So I knew that I had to keep on stop. I had to stop drinking. At first, I thought there were just going to be advice on how to carry on drinking. But it wasn't, and I went to more meetings, and that was in May, I think about 20 years ago. On the 1st of May is when I'd stopped drinking. And I remember that first Christmas day, we were all in the house, and it was lovely, and it was lovely all day, and I remembered it all, and I wasn't getting drunk or causing arguments with the kids. So it was lovely to have that. But then on New Year's Eve, I went to a meeting and then we went to a party at someone's house afterwards. And that was so weird. It was magical though, not being drunk on New Year's Eve. But with the person whose house we'd gone to, the house was on a hill, so we could see for miles all the fireworks and stuff. That was my best New Year's Eve ever, my first one sober. But then, it must have been the following December that I met my ex, who I was with for a year. We had like 10 years of madness in one year because he was just as bad as me. And at the end of our relationship, it was a couple of weeks before Christmas, I decided that I was going to drink again because I'd had a spare phone and a message to him pretending to be someone else. And he'd said that he was single and he definitely didn't have a significant other. And that's when I decided to drink again because I couldn't cope with the pain. So I did go to the meeting that night and I didn't tell anyone what I was thinking. I was just waiting for it to finish so I could go home and get off the bus and go to the supermarket and get my booze. I was just determined to, that's what was going to happen. And as I took my first drink, I remember saying, I hope this doesn't last too long. I didn't want my drunk to last too long. And luckily it only lasted a week, but that was on a Monday. Then on the Sunday of that week is when I must have stopped drinking. I woke up feeling the worst I ever had, you know, the worst hangover I'd ever had. And I knew that that wasn't the answer. Nothing had changed. Nothing was cured. I just felt like shit. So then I stopped. That day, when I woke up and decided that I stopped drinking. And that was a week before Christmas, so it was the 18th of December, 18 years ago now. I got my shit together and started taking my sponsor seriously, started on going through the steps and going to loads of meetings. I had a bus pass, so I was going to at least one, maybe two meetings a day sometimes, which sounds weird now, you know, that I can say I've been to six meetings today. Does sound weird compared to then. But I'm glad I did all that. It changed me. I am changed to what I used to be, and I always thought that people couldn't change, you know, once they've made their minds up. And listening to all these people who talk about how they used to be and what they're like now, that took a while to believe them. I did, and I made many, many wonderful friends. Had about 15, 14 or 15 years ago now, I had cervical cancer. I had a treatment for it, but then the cells had migrated, so I had an operation and then chemo and
No pad shift. Try always Ultra Daylight pads.
radiotherapy. Thank you. Had a fiance at the time when I was going through the beginning stage to find out what was wrong with me. And then when I came home and told him I had cancer, he left. He said he didn't love me enough. And he said, other people get cancer, get over it. Which I think is quite cruel, really, but apparently that happens with a lot of men. They can't cope with the wife or the other half getting cancer, so they just leave. It's too much shit to deal with. But I look at it now and think, thank God I got cancer, I might have married him. And also, me and my kids took ownership of the other people get cancer, get over it phrase. You know, we'd like other people run out of milk, get over it. We'd made it so trivial and took any sting out of it. I mean, looking back now, I still think it's cruel. He's kind of tried to apologize to me once. I know him. I didn't feel it was sincere, but that's not up to me. It's up to him, whatever he says. But you see, it's not smoked for years, and then I saw him outside this meeting, and he was smoking away and did this apology shit. And I pointed to his cig and said, be careful of that, Andy, you might get cancer. Which is what I intend to do if I see him again, because it makes me smile. But it is what it is, and I'm single now, and I'm happy about that. And my daughter had twins about 13 years ago. Twin girls. They're not identical, but they're my no, the 12-year-old grandkids. And I stopped going to meetings because her husband worked weird shifts. So I'd be at hers when he was at work. So the meetings weren't important anymore, looking after the babies was. And I went to a couple of conventions over the years. There's one in Blackpool over here, and it's an international convention, and it was packed, or hundreds of people there. And I think I've been three or four times, and I kind of force myself to go to see if I like it, but I don't because it's too many people. I don't mind sitting in a group with the people that I know and chatting, you know, which is what I did a lot, but I was just overwhelmed with the with too many people there. And there was a smaller one at a little seaside place called Scarborough. And I've been to that a few times, and that's only a few hundred people, if that. So I like that one. It's lovely. I love the part of the convention where you get to meet other people and see how many people are there, and it's amazing to see that many people in a room and knowing why they're all there. And then at the end of the convention, singing, oh, what is it? Wind Beneath My Wings, which almost made me cry. I prefer smaller meetings. And then the pandemic happened, and I was left all alone because we couldn't be in contact with each other. My daughters live over the road from me. They used to live a house a few houses down, so I've always lived over the road from them for the past 10 years or so. Well, not so much with Shannon. She only moved in there a few years ago. So it was lovely being so close to the grandkids, and to be able to go places with them and take them out. And, you know, I've got plenty of photos and videos, and they've never seen me drunk. You know, that was never on my mind when I was with them. And then when Shannon got pregnant with Daisy, she moved in a house like 5 minutes up the road. And we were all together. You know, like me and Laura were the first ones who knew she was pregnant. So we knew from like a few weeks pregnant. So we've got like loads of photos and videos, family days out while she could. And then when Daisy was born, I was in the room along with Shannon's partner at the time, Ben. I was there watching it. It was, oh my God, it was fucking amazing. If you ever have a chance to be a birth partner for someone, do it, because watching a baby come into this world is, oh my God. You know, I'm getting goosebumps now. I'll never forget that feeling. And then when Daisy was born, she was put wrapped up and then put into Shannon's arms. Although, no, she wasn't wrapped up. She was just put into Shannon's arms, and a towel was put over her. And I was there just watching, and then Ben said, "Hello, Daisy." And she turned her head towards him. She'd only just been born. Babies are not supposed to be able to do that. And I wouldn't have believed it if somebody hadn't, if I hadn't seen it myself. So me and Daisy have always been really close. We just, there's lots of little things, you know, we're the same in a lot of ways. She looks a lot like me now. I've got a photo of me at her age now, and it's you'd think it was the same person. So it was wonderful to see, to be with her and to look after her. And I was just, you know, I'd just drop everything to go and look after Daisy. But then, a couple of years back, it'd kind of been building up. Shannon was getting pissed off with me, which is weird because we were always so close. Then after one, she used to scream at me. It wasn't an argument, it was just her being pissed off at me. Because I ended up not saying anything back because nothing worked anyway. So I'd just sit there and either not say anything, but then it got to her screaming at me and me kind of looking down and looking around and just ignoring, which she really didn't like. But she didn't hold back with the things that she said. You know, she'd accuse me of being violent and shouting and swearing at him, and that's not what I did. That's not what kind of mother I was. But I think she just got pissed off with the world, and I was her sounding board. You know, the person who'd always forgive her. But this one time, she'd just gone out of the room, and I swore at her, and my granddaughter heard and told them, and everybody went, it just blew up. My daughter used to do the, well, she still does. Christmas dinner on Christmas Eve because they don't want the hassle of it on Christmas Day. So it's really relaxed, chilled out day. Everybody's kind of helping with the cooking if need to be, or you know, taking the kids to the park if they're getting a bit rambunctious. And I loved being part of that. I was banned from that. There's two Christmas Eves that I've not been to, two Christmas days that I've been allowed to go to Laura's for between like, I think it was between 1 and 4, and then between 4 and 7 last year. Was something like that. So I was allowed to go over to Laura's for a few hours on Christmas Day to give out presents. And I thought, geez, I'm just, it's not even joyful like Santa Claus. It's just, I just thought, well, they're taking the piss. You know, I've seen my eldest granddaughters. I used to see them every Sunday, but they've always been busy for the last 6 weeks or so. So I've not seen them, and it's so weird being a big part of that, being a part of the family for all those years with the kids growing up and stuff. And now that I'm not needed anymore, I'm not wanted over there. My daughters say that I've not changed, and you know, I obviously have. I know that I have. I'm not like I was before I stopped drinking. But there's nothing I can do. There's nothing I can do about other people, what they do or say, what they think of me. And I am slowly accepting that. I'm better than I was 18 months ago. But it's weird, it's like being an empty nester, but quicker than I thought. I'm having to do things that, well, for me, I'm not used to it. I'm used to doing things for other people, for them. I can cope with stuff, and that's thanks to Zoom, thanks to online AA and you know, all these they used to say at the face-to-face meetings that you've got friends all over the world, you just haven't met them yet. And I now know that to be true. I know that I've got so many good friends on Zoom, and I feel part of I feel part of it. I feel part of the family. There's like a bunch of us from the 1 p.m. everyday meeting who seem to go to all the meetings and stay around and chat afterwards. And although I don't say a lot, because I'm not as gobby as I used to be, but it's lovely to feel part of that. Feel part of a friendship group, and a couple of weeks ago, when I thought that Friday was Thursday, because I do that because I'm retired and I don't remember the days, everybody just got on with the meeting and it went ahead. And that was wonderful. But the best thing was I had people phoning me and messaging me and asking if there's anything wrong. And at first I thought, what on earth? But then I realized that people care, and that was amazing. To know that people care even if I don't. And I've been able to talk about all this stuff with my daughters. And there's been, we've sort of talked and there's been tough questions. I've got to the point where I recognize what I did wrong, and I am accepting that I can't do anything about what they say or do. It's a long time to wait till the kids are older and then can decide for themselves. But I do see Daisy on at Easter, on a birthday, and at Christmas. Shannon must have asked Daisy what she wanted for a birthday. What she'd give her whatever she wanted most in the world. And Daisy, who's was 5 at the time, said that she wanted to see me. And it took a couple of weeks to realize what she'd actually said. And I thought, Jesus, that 5-year-old has got more sent in ahead than the adults around her. So I do see her, but and I live, like I said, across the road from them, more or less. So I do sometimes see the kids when I'm going out, which is lovely. And I'm usually called over, and it's nice. It's lovely to see them like that. It's when it's just a off chance meeting. But one of the main things the kids were bothered about is me being so messy. And I am. I'm a bit of a hoarder. And I don't like that about myself. And I'm trying to do something about it by just doing one bag a day, which is better than nothing. I'm getting there. I'm working through it and doing what I can instead of just being upset at it all. I'm getting off my ass and doing something. I couldn't have, sorry about this. This past 18 months, specifically since I've been stopped seeing the grandkids as much, I've been on Zoom so much, not quite as much recently, but I'd go from meeting to meeting in the early days when I first found Zoom. It's soothing, and it helps listening to other people's problems because it takes my mind off my own. And I love talking to people because listening to other people's problems takes my mind off my own. It's nice to. Well, it's nice to feel appreciated sometimes, and I get that in Zoom meetings. And love coming to them, and I'm gonna carry on as long as I can. So I'll leave it there. Thanks for asking, Jan.